So, iron deficiency and heart failure, from evidence to practice. So I just told you the program. Now we have some conflicts, potential conflicts to report. Most of us have been involved in studies with both iron and erythropoietin stimulating agents with companies that manufacture these compounds. So, coming to the science now. When we look at patients with heart failure, and there's a lot about heart failure in this symposium too, it's still a very deadly disease, and many patients are still dying from it. It's not only quality of life is very impaired, but also prognosis in these patients is very impaired. And although in the last 10 to 15 years there's been big achievements in making these patients live longer, the survival of these patients after 5 to 6 years follow-up is still around 50%. And that goes for both patients with low ejection fraction, generally less than 35 or 40%, and patients with high ejection fraction. Now, there's a lot of data out there that may suggest that, in fact, patients with preserved EF might do a little bit better. But if you have these patients measured in another way that you can document that indeed they have HFpEF, so heart failure with normal ejection fraction or preserved ejection fraction, their prognosis is still quite poor. These patients have a lot of comorbidities as well, and we'll come back to that later. But again, both groups do very poorly in terms of outcome. And in addition, patients with heart failure also have a significantly impaired quality of life, and that can be measured by many scales. And if you look at normal people, no patients, that's called the SF-36 questionnaire here, score about 80, you can see that in many diseases such as depression and hepatitis and dialysis, which is a pretty severe disease as well, it's significantly impaired to 40 to 50. But in fact, heart failure patients, this study published a couple of years ago in Heart, you see that heart failure patients were doing the worst of all. And that makes a lot of sense because these patients cannot walk freely. They very often suffer most of the day from shortness of breath or fatigue. Question then is, how bad is this impaired quality of life? And this is an sort of philosophical question that's been posed many times by regulation authorities too. Because in the past, there were companies that had drugs on the market that made patients feel better, but sometimes they lived shorter, and it's a discussion you may have with your patients too. What is more important for these patients, to live a few weeks shorter but to feel much better, or to live as long as possible? And in fact, they've done a study here, and they looked at the patients who would be willing to trade in time, and this is a bit of a cynical question, maybe trade in time for quality of life. And if you see here, these patients, when you're in around 1.0, you do not want to trade in time because you want to live as long as possible. And this on this scale, if you're on zero, you do want to trade in time. And you can see here that in this patient population, patient that had very normal breathing, no signs and symptoms of heart failure, were not willing to trade in time because they had no complaints. But if you look at patients that have difficulty with breathing and don't feel well, feel uncomfortable, they are willing to trade in time. In other words, quality of life for these patients is very, very important. They think that maybe that's more important than living a few months or weeks longer. Now, as I said before, heart failure is a disease that has a lot of comorbidities, and that makes a lot of sense because the heart is the pump. And if we don't pump around blood, all the organs will have less perfusion and will have problems. And in addition, there will be congestion. And many studies in recent years have shown that both components play an important role in, for example, renal dysfunction, but also in liver dysfunction, also in probably in the functioning of the brain, and probably also in bone marrow. In fact, every organ in the body suffers from those two components, from forward and backward failure. Now, many of these diseases come with heart failure, and in fact, if you have these comorbidities, you will fare worse, and you will have many more complaints. And that's COPD, as we know. Diabetes plays a very big role. I was just in a symposium with Mark Pfeffer, and he's done a lot of work in this field, of course. Depression plays a big role, too. It's probably at least one-third of patients have depression. Gout, that may be due to use of diuretics. And iron deficiency, the thing we're talking about this afternoon. Now, renal function is very important, too, and anemia, of course, as well. And we'll come back to both iron deficiency and anemia, because for a long time, people thought that those two things were very much always the same thing, that iron deficiency would only lead to anemia. But it's very important, I think, today to identify iron deficiency, but to also realize that iron deficiency not only leads to anemia, but has many other separate problems as well. Now, hypertension is, you can call a comorbidity, angina pectoris, cancer, cachexia is very important. Stefan Anker has done a lot of work in that field. hyperlipidemia and erectile dysfunction. So we'll talk about iron deficiency with or without anemia this afternoon. Now again, coming back to iron deficiency anemia, iron deficiency is the major reason for anemia in patients with heart failure, but in other diseases as well. And this is a relatively large study where we looked at the cause of the etiology of anemia. And you can see in this study, more than 50% of the patients had anemia of chronic disease. Some of them had renal disease with important components, some iron deficiency where they indicated iron deficiency or other diseases. But many of these patients that may be labeled as anemia of chronic disease, so they have a cytokine activation, they have all kinds of inflammatory markers that are activated, also have iron deficiency that is leading to a decreased erythropoiesis. And we'll come back to these things later in this symposium as well. So the point I want to make is that, first of all, the identification of iron deficiency is very important, and that's hopefully one of the take-home messages when you leave this room after the symposium, that it's anemia and it's iron deficiency. They do overlap, but they are not at all the same. So many patients will have iron deficiency but not anemia. There are patients that have anemia and no iron deficiency. Iron deficiency is in a way a separate thing. And in fact, iron deficiency and maybe not so much anemia is associated with reduced exercise capacity, reduced quality of life, and poor outcome. Now, anemia, so these are the patients that have only iron deficiency but no anemia. They have these three things. Anemia itself is, of course, also associated with these things, but iron deficiency alone without anemia also causes these things. Now, we're coming back to the guidelines now, or we're coming to the guidelines, and this will be discussed maybe later today in the symposium as well. It's a relatively new kid on the block, if you will, iron deficiency. And in the 2008 guidelines, there was no specific mention of iron deficiency at all at the time. Of course, the Ferry-Chef study was not yet published, and people did know about it, but it was more internal medicine specialists or nephrologists who were looking at iron deficiency. It was only mentioned as a cause of anemia, and those guidelines in 2008, correction of anemia was not yet established as a routine therapy in heart failure. Now, that all changed in 2012, and my co-chair was the chairman of those guidelines in 2012. And in fact, then iron deficiency was recognized as a comorbidity in heart failure. Then, of course, the Ferry-Chef study had been published, but there were some additional studies that also clearly pointed out the importance of iron deficiency. And in the guidelines in 2012, it also was stated that the detection of iron deficiency was recommended with a class 1C indication for patients suspected to have heart failure. I don't know if you know what that means, 1C. It means that that's an expert opinion. There are no major trials that show that. But all the experts around the table, and there were a lot of experts, heart failure experts, in the 2012 guidelines, they felt that way. Now, measurement of iron parameters are newly recommended 1C as a standard for the diagnosis in ambulatory patients suspected of having heart failure, and that's in addition to standard biochemical measurements such as sodium, potassium, renal function, etc. And that's here is recommended hemoglobin, hematocrit, ferritin, leukocytes, and platelets. And there's some more measurement about it, because on the one thing you need to measure ferritin, and we'll come back to that later. If you have an absolute iron deficiency, your ferritin levels are below 100. But you can also have an iron deficiency when your ferritin levels are between 100 to 300, but your saturation level, your T-set levels are low. And two definitions are used for that, either 15% or 20%. Most people now use 20%. So your ferritin can be between 100 to 300, but your T-set, your saturation is still too low, and then you have a relative iron deficiency. But some speakers in this symposium will come back to that later. So iron deficiency is, for the first time, mentioned as a comorbidity. Like I said, it's between 100 or it's between 100 and 300 when the T-set is between, below 20%. And the treatment with ferric carboxy maltose may be considered to improve symptoms, exercise capacity, and quality of life. And that's all mentioned in section 11.14 in the guidelines, all these things. So if you want to read about this more, you can go to the website iontherapy.org and read about all these things. And I'd like to do very much now to go on and introduce the first speaker at the symposium. That's going to be Professor Piotr Ponikowski.